You drink it all the time. As a matter of fact, you can't live without it. But do you ever stop and think, is my water safe? Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Before we get started with our discussion today, which is about the water in our region, let me remind you that the best way to join in today's conversation is by sending us an email. And our email address is tfs@wshu.org. And maybe you can tell us how you get your water. Does it come from your town, your city? Does it come from your well? How does it taste? How does it smell? Is it hard? Is it soft? Or do you only drink bottled water or have it delivered? Now, what prompted today's show was that we were talking about that horrible situation in Newark with lead in the water. And we thought about Flint then and how that shocked all of us for a while, and then that faded from the news. And that prompted a very simple question, which is, how's our water? Do you ever really think twice about it? Unless it's brown or gray or smells funny? We have a number of guests for you today. And let's start by welcoming Lori Matthew. Lori is the Public Health Section Chief Drinking Water Section with the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Lori, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Lori, before we begin, and we're just talking about Connecticut right now. Later on in another segment in our program, we're going to be taking a look at Long Island. What percentage of the state of Connecticut gets its water from a municipal source, and what percentage gets it from a well?
Well, those are really very good questions. In our small state of Connecticut, there are public water systems. And I can maybe take a step back. Not directly answering your question, but the Department of Public Health that I work for, and specifically I oversee the drinking water section that regulates all the public water systems in our state. Our state is a small state, but we have over 2,500 public water systems that are regulated. So a public water system serves 25 or more people. Those water systems, when I say regulated by the department, are responsible sample themselves and provide that information to the department, as well as they are responsible for a whole host of Safe Drinking Water Act requirements that my staff of engineers and environmental analysts oversee every day. So there's water quality information that comes to our department that our department oversees. There's water quantity information, and we are assuring safe drinking water every day with the work that we do in our oversight of the regulated public water systems that are in our state.
Okay.
So there are a variety of systems. Out of the 2,500, many of those are very small systems. A well that serves a restaurant in a very rural part of our state, we have many of those. That is a public water system because it serves 25 or more people. But In the more urbanized areas, there are 80 public water systems that are, most of those are municipal systems that serve, Danbury, for instance, they have their own municipal water system that serves 65,000 people, or Meriden, or Wallingford, Manchester, Norwich, they have their own separate municipal public water system. There are about 80 water systems that serve over 1,000 people. Of those 80, most of those are municipally based water systems. Some of them are big private utilities, privately shareholder held utilities known as Aquarian, for instance, Aquarian Water Company, which serves the southwest part of our state and the greater Bridgeport all the way down to Greenwich area, and they serve about 600,000 people in that part of Connecticut. And there's also Connecticut Water Company that has a variety of systems across our state, which serve about 350,000 people. And then our next largest water systems are the Regional Water Authority that serves the greater New Haven area, the 10 municipalities in the New Haven area, and then the Metropolitan District Commission, the MDC, that serves the greater Hartford area, and that serves about the 10 or 11 towns in the greater Hartford area. And between the Regional Water Authority and the MDC in Hartford, they serve about just over 400,000 people. So those are the four larger public water systems that are in our state of Connecticut.
I'm just going to jump in here because our time is tight, so I just want to get to as many questions as I can. Who does the testing? Who makes sure the water is okay?
The public water systems conduct the testing based upon the regulated schedule that is overseen by the Safe Drinking Water Act and mandated by the Safe Drinking Water Act, which is part of the regulations and requirements that the Department of Health oversees. So the water systems pull the samples themselves. They electronically submit that through a state-certified laboratory electronically to our department here, which we oversee compliance and oversee enforcement to make sure that the rules and the regulations are being complied with.
So here's a simple question. How's the water in Connecticut?
Water in Connecticut is good. If there's a problem, that's our job, is to oversee and make sure that it gets back to safe levels. A big part of our job is if there is a water system that has a concern or a problem or there are complaints, we are more than capable of working with that water system or the people that are concerned and have issues. But one of the just overall in general, our water quality is very uniquely protected. One item I wanted to point out is that we are unique across the country. Our reservoir systems, which in Connecticut, if you can imagine, our small state has 150 reservoir systems, and it serves 70% of the people that consume public drinking water. So out of the 2.8 million people that are served public water, 70% are consuming surface water. Those surface water reservoir systems are protected by state laws that have been around a very long time. And in Connecticut, we're unique across the country with this one law, which does not allow a sewage treatment plant discharge to be upriver or up in the watershed, in the drainage area of a public water supply watershed. So with our reservoirs are uniquely protected and have very high quality water supplies. Now, that across our state, there are many systems that use a variety of sources, and we could go into a lot of detail here. But you know, every one of those 80 systems have their own sources of supply. Some of them are just surface water. Some of them are surface water and groundwater. Some of them use groundwater supplies that are shallow sand and gravel aquifer based, or some of them that are bedrock based well fields. But everyone, seems like every town, every 169 town that you go to, the sources and the systems are uniquely based.
So the water is tested by you, by the private companies. Everyone makes sure that it's okay, and then it comes into our building. So let's say it comes into our building here in Fairfield, to our radio studios. And it's a new building nowadays. As a matter of fact, it's beautiful, state of the art. But let's say it went into an older building with older pipes, older fixtures, and so on. How do I know that the water, when I know when it's leaving you, everything's fine, but how do I know once it goes through the series of pipes and all the rest in the older building, how do I know that it's okay?
That's a very good question. The water utilities conduct an enormous, especially the larger ones, conduct an enormous amount of testing throughout their distribution network. They're in the Safe Drinking Water Act, that is through EPA, there are 17 distinct rules. A number of those rules oversee water quality within the distribution network. There's a variety of treatment systems that are also overseen by the public water systems themselves as well. So in Fairfield, in particular, you're receiving water from Aquarian Water Company. That water company has treatment systems just north of Bridgeport, and they have very large surface water supplies just north of the Bridgeport area. And there's a number of surface water treatment plants that they run, and those treatment plants are providing treated water, and they're assuring that the water is not corrosive as well. And there's a number of tests and samples that are conducted so that the water is safe to consume, even in those older buildings.
Let me ask you, I know time is tight, and if you don't mind, I'm going to carry you over the break, and just because I have two or three other questions for you, I have to ask you about bottled water or having water delivered. I mean, it's a huge business in all across the state of Connecticut and Long Island, too. Many people work for these businesses. What's your take on buying bottled water or having water delivered to your home or business? Is it necessary in our region?
Our being the manager of the drinking water section at the State Department of Public Health and the oversight of public water systems statewide, I would say we've always said your water is safe to drink. If your water is not safe to drink, your water supply gets interrupted, you will certainly be notified. But we believe that the purchase of bottled water is not necessary. We believe you can drink from the tap. Tap water is clean and safe. And there's an enormous amount of work and behind-the-scenes work that is conducted by our public water systems and the certified operators that run the water systems, that provide for the treatment systems, and the oversight of the Department of Public Health as well. We inspect the water systems every 3 years. We have work with the water systems on any treatment that's added to make sure the water is safe to consume. So I would say that the tap water is safe to consume, and that if people have any questions about what is in their water, they certainly could contact our department if there's any concerns whatsoever. We're here to answer questions from anybody who has questions about their water quality. Also, consumers could contact their water utility individually. There's also a report known as the Consumer Confidence Report that is issued on an annual basis to the consumers directly from the water company that discusses the overall water quality of that water system. So there's a lot of information that can be provided to consumers if they have any questions about what their water quality is.
Lori Matthew is with us for just a few more moments, and then we're going to bring in our other guests. Lori is the Public Health Section Chief, Drinking Water Section, for the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Lori, thanks for staying with us. And it seems that the last few years, the last thing that we had to do was worry about a lack of water. I mean, it's been raining. It's been raining a lot. So we appear to be good for now. But as you and I both know, everything goes in cycles for the most part. So I'm guessing we're going to be looking at arid conditions sometime in the future. Are we set for that? Do we have enough drinkable water?
Yes, that's a good question. Well, one of the things that those 80 public water systems do ever since 1986 is produce what is known as a long-term water supply plan. That plan is produced by the water system and submitted to the Department of Public Health and three other agencies for review and approval. What that plan sets forward since 1986 is a plan for supply and demand over the next 50 years. These plans are updated every 6 or 9 years. And so moving forward over the last 30 years, we've had the plans in place look at supply and demand. And they look at what sources of supply might need to be developed next in order to meet that demand. It also looks at system capacity, looks at any issues or reinvestment the water system needs to make, and has a capital improvement plan. So that's another unique state law that has, I think, served the state of Connecticut very well. Back in 2016, 2017, there was a drought, and there was a concern, and specifically in your particular area and the four towns in the southwest part of the state of Connecticut. One of the items that Aquarian Water is working on is system capacity and being able to meet demands, but also going to a pattern of two-day watering in those four towns in the southwest part. Instead of irrigating every single day, really irrigation could be used, 2 days a week and still sustain people's landscapes. So Aquarian Water has really worked hard to assure that while our water is high quality, right, and our water is also plentiful, we don't want to waste the water. We want to protect our water supplies. We want to have people feel that the water is safe to drink and that there's adequate supply for people to have water for their homes and for the future. So these water supply plans have been a very good effort on behalf of the state of Connecticut in long-term planning for water supply.
Lori, I have to jump in. I only have a minute left, and I'd like to invite you back for a much longer discussion sometime in the near future because there's so many more questions I have for you. One last question. I just want to ask you about microplastics, and I don't know if this is in your bailiwick, but I've been reading so much about them nowadays, about how we breathe them, and then I read this article basically saying they're in everything that we drink nowadays. Is that something that the Department of Public Health is concerned about, tests for, or knows anything about?
Well, I as you, we're always looking into what the next concerns could be in the future. I've read an awful lot about it. It's not something that is tested for at this moment in time, but it's something that is we keep an eye on what the future emerging concerns could be. But that's something that, I believe is on the horizon that we will be looking at. Certainly there's under the governor's task force for perfluorinated compounds, which just was kicked off back in July. And the perfluorinated compounds is an emerging concern, an emerging contaminant, and something that between our agency and the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection are working hard under the task force to move forward with an action plan for the governor by October 1st. So that's in. I bring that up because that is an emerging item, and I think in the future there will be other things, and there always is things to look at, concerns to acknowledge, and work together on addressing.
There's always something new.
Public health.
Always something new coming down the pipe, right?
Yes.
Laurie Matthew, Public Health Section Chief, Drinking Water Section, Connecticut Department of Public Health. Laurie, thank you. I appreciate your time. Thanks for staying with us. And as I said, we'll get you back for a much longer discussion in the very near future.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate you having the Department of Public Health on.
Thanks, Laurie. You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU, and today we're talking about something that every single one of us needs, which is water. Let me introduce you to our next guests. They have been patiently holding on. I appreciate that. Professor Chris Gobler is the Endowed Chair of Coastal Ecology and Conservation, the School of Marine and Atmospheric Sciences at Stony Brook University. Professor, how are you? Thanks for being with us.
No, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Steve Colabufo is the Water Resources Manager with the Suffolk County Water Authority. Hi, Steve. How are you?
How are you? Thank you for having me.
And Steve Tarasiano is the Associate Director for the U.S. Geological Survey, the New York Water Science Center on Long Island. Steve, do you like Steve or Steven?
For me,
Steve
is fine.
Steve can go by Steve.
Okay, so Steven and Steve, thank you both. Professor, we were just talking about Connecticut and where residents get their water. Where does Long Island's water come from?
Well, Long Island has what's known as a sole source aquifer. So we get all of our drinking water from the ground, from groundwater supplies below our feet. And, that goes for everywhere in Suffolk County and in Nassau County, whereas when you get to the city, Brooklyn and Queens, they're getting water from reservoirs upstate.
Okay, when you say it's below your feet, our feet, how deep are we talking about?
Oh, it all depends on where you are. When you're in a coastal region, the groundwater can be very shallow, less than 10 feet. When you get further into the center of Long Island, it could be much deeper until you get to groundwater. It could be more than 100 feet. And then that groundwater goes for hundreds of feet below there.
So, Professor, here's the gazillion-dollar question for you. How's the quality?
Well, I think for most people, when they're getting a public water supply, like from the Suffolk County Water Authority, it's good because it's tested on a very regular basis. But not everyone on Long Island has a public water supply. I believe the number is that there's more than 100,000 private wells on Long Island. In fact, I myself have a private well in my backyard. When I first got my house, it was only 30 feet deep. It's now 100 feet deep because I drilled it deeper. But still, I don't have the testing facilities of a large public water supplier, and therefore, there is concern. And we heard from Connecticut what's happening there. And certainly, there are plenty of emerging contaminants in drinking water supplies on Long Island, things like the perfluorinated compounds, PFAS, and PFOA, PFOA, PFOS. As well as other compounds like 1,4-dioxane, which are, both of which are, or all of which are showing up in different water supplies in different places and are human health concerns. So anyway, it's a long way of saying, in general, good, but we need to be mindful and be monitoring.
Professor, just a quick question, and then I'm going to ask Steve Colabufo about something. How often do you have your well tested?
I try to do it at least once a year, and the really interesting thing is I see every year the nitrate levels in my own water supply keep going up. When I moved in about a dozen years ago, they're at about 3 milligrams per liter. And now I'm already up to 8. And the EPA would tell me I have to stop using my well water at 10. So looking for public water soon.
Steve Colabuffo is the Water Resources Manager with the Suffolk County Water Authority. Steve, what's your perspective? How's the water?
Well, as Christopher said, generally speaking, water quality on Long Island is good. There are specific areas where it is not. You know, there's certain contamination areas, Superfund sites, and things like that. But from a drinking water quality perspective, as Christopher said also, we have extensive treatment that is required by the EPA. The Water Authority itself treats at a greater frequency and for more contaminants than the law requires. And so your public drinking water is of excellent quality and meets or is better than the typical standards that are required by the government agencies.
Steve, can I get a quick comment from you about what was just in the news over the last 24 hours that you're going to be getting $4 million from the federal government? What's it for?
If it's what I think it's for upgrading and installing treatment systems for what are called emerging contaminants. There's perfluorinated compounds and 1,4-dioxane, and that's what I believe that's for.
I guess I was referring to what was taking place at Gabreski.
Well, Gabreski has, I believe, some of those types of contaminants in the groundwater nearby, and the Water Authority has been pretty active in providing public water to places that don't have it and whose private wells are affected by these chemicals. So more than likely that is what that is for, to either extend water mains in or to upgrade treatment facilities.
It just seems like that's such a, I won't say common nowadays, but we hear stories more and more about pollutants being found from the past that obviously are impacting everything that's going on nowadays. Are you worried about the unknowns going future?
Certainly. As more wells are drilled, as more surveys are done, more contaminants are discovered out there in the environment, and we're certainly concerned about how they may affect existing or future wells. So we actively participate, or at least actively look at information gathered by the DEC and the EPA on these contaminants, and to the extent that they threaten people that aren't on public water, we do our best to run water mains to those areas. There's one area in Waynescott where the Water Authority just extended water mains to, and I believe Gabreski and a few other areas are currently on our radar for that as well. So anybody with a private well that could potentially be threatened by these contaminant spills or just disposals over the years, we certainly want to hook them up to the maximum extent possible to public water so they know they have a tested and safe source of drinking water.
Steven Terraciano is a very patient man. He's the Associate Director for the U.S. Geological Survey. I appreciate your time, Steven. He's with the New York Water Science Center on Long Island. Tell us how the geology of Long Island affects the water quality, what we're seeing nowadays.
Oh, my. Well, the aquifer system is composed of sand silts and gravels, and as Chris mentioned, it can be very thin in places and very thick in others. The sand silts and gravels sort of rest on a bedrock surface which tilts to the south and to the east, and so the thickness of these sediments can be very thin to near zero in places like Whitestone near the bridge to over 2,000 feet thick under Fire Island. So in terms of the water transmitting properties and how they are dispersed throughout the island, it can affect the time it takes for which water, which starts out as a raindrop and makes its way through the unsaturated zone and then percolates to the water table and then finds its way through the system to a discharge point, you know, at the coast, or may be interrupted or withdrawn from wells. And so the naturally occurring contaminants, which are affected by the geology, would be radium or radon. And thankfully, we don't see that in the sediments here. In terms of the geology affecting the geochemical environment through which these contaminants, which are dissolved in the water, move, it can affect, you know, the aquifer's ability to degradate these compounds and will affect the time of travel of them through the system.
Professor Gobler, what concerns you most about the future in terms of the safety, the quality of the water supply?
Well, I mean, these emerging chemicals is really, I think, is what is the biggest concern. I mean, if we were sitting down having the same conversation 3 years ago, you know, none of us would be talking about perfluorinated compounds. And now, in just 3 years' time, there's you know, up to a dozen different locations on Long Island with contaminated drinking water from these perfluorinated compounds. The state has just set one of the most, New York State has just set one of the most restrictive and protective limits for these compounds. And again, this all happened very, very quickly. And it's partly because of emerging ability to detect these compounds, as well as emerging research that has shown the danger of these compounds. And, you know, a parallel story exists to some extent for 1,4-dioxane, although it's been, you know, that had been a little bit better known. But, you know, I would imagine looking forward that there will be similar classes of compounds, you know, these emerging sorts of compounds that are identified and that are of concern, and then we'll need to be testing for them and figuring out how to treat for them. You know, some of the compounds are easier to remove than others. And on the perfluorinated compound front, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but again, we're worried about PFOA and PFOS. I'm not going to give a chemistry lesson, but those are compounds with 8 carbon chains. But as it turns out, when these things break down, they still have the fluorine on them, and they can be shorter chains. And those are also a health concern, and that people aren't really even looking at those. So, again, the whole idea, there's probably more out there, and you know, there's certainly more that will come up in the coming years, and that's certainly of concern.
Steve Colabufo, I only have 1 minute left in this segment. I'd like to invite everybody back in the future for the entire program. But Steve, with that minute that we have left, what would you like the state to do? What would you like the federal government to do that would give you a helping hand?
Well, a phase-in of the regulations would certainly help. I mean, right now we're looking at pretty significant, significantly small contaminant levels that are going to be allowable within 6 months. It takes quite a while to develop the technology and to get the approval from the appropriate government agencies for different treatment techniques. So a slower phase-in would certainly be help. We are absolutely committed to removing these chemicals and not having them in the drinking water supply, but it may just take a little more time than was originally planned because of the way things tend to move.
Steve Colabufo is the Water Resources Manager with the Suffolk County Water Authority. Stephen Terraciano is the Associate Director for the U.S. Geological Survey, New York Water Science Center on Long Island. And Professor Chris Gobler is the Endowed Chair of Coastal Ecology and Conservation, the School of Marine and Atmospheric Sciences at Stony Brook University. My thanks to all of you, and again, my apologies for a lack of time today, but we promise to get you all back in the future, and we'll have a nice long conversation. Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
We have two more guests to join us in this segment. Let's welcome back Adrian Esposito, the Executive Director of the Citizens Campaign for the Environment, and also Kevin McAllister, founder and president of Defend H2O. Kevin, Adrian, how are you? Thanks for coming back on with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Ron.
Adrian, how's the water on Long Island?
That is the frequently most asked question I've gotten in the last 35 years of my work.
Is that really the number one question?
Oh, absolutely. Unequivocally, without doubt.
Okay.
People who call our office who are moving to a certain community, they call and say, how's the water in that community? People who are concerned about health ailments in their family call me and say, do you think it's the water? I mean, honestly, we get multiple calls about this. And it sounds like such a simple question, and it's not. basically, I think it's important for people to know the water is rigorously tested multiple times throughout the year, no matter where you are, unless you have a private well. But even though it's rigorously tested and many times treated for a wide variety of contaminants, volatile organic chemicals, pesticides, we have a lot of contamination in our groundwater. We have 24 federal toxic plumes. We have over 200 state Superfund sites. We have these emerging contaminants of PFOA, PFOS, and 1,4-dioxane. We have a lot of contaminants because 100% of our drinking water comes from underground. So everything we do on the surface seeps underground and contaminates that drinking water. So if you apply pesticides or people, if there used to be leaking underground storage tanks for gasoline, you name it, it all mixes with that underground water supply that we eventually drink.
As someone said to me the other day, we're standing on our water supply.
Yeah, I like to say 3 million people live on top of their drinking water. What could possibly go wrong?
I'm sorry for laughing. It's just a great line.
It's true. And the answer is a lot.
Kevin, what's your take? How do you think the water supply is?
Adrian summed it up well. I would just add that, you know, this drinking water supply, which is in fact finite because of our island nature, and then if you consider the estuarine waters with the freshwater feed coming via groundwater, those contaminants, nutrients, the VOCs, as Adrian spoke of, emerging contaminants, the perfluorinated compounds, you know, affecting major drinking water supplies. But ultimately, those contaminants and nutrients are moving toward coastal waters. And we, of course, are seeing some real problems with water quality as a result of it.
Kevin, you're based out of Sag Harbor, aren't you?
Correct,
okay.
Yes.
Now, what aren't the towns doing to protect the drinking water supply, and what should they be doing?
I think they've been pretty active on certainly on the wastewater front to try to transition into alternative systems that effectively denitrify. I think where there are contaminants identified, I think they've been responsive. I think we're at a stage where we need just monumental monitoring throughout the island to really almost have the first alert as to where drinking water supplies are in fact affected. A real issue that I certainly have been speaking to.
Adrian, just because of the quality of the phone lines, because I think you're both on cells. Kevin, why don't you finish, and then Adrian, you could just pick it up.
What I was going to say with sea level rise and what we can expect in the coming decades, roughly we've seen a 4-inch rise over the past 40 years. We're looking up to 30 inches over the next 40, saltwater intrusion affecting coastal water supplies, and then in turn pushing the demand into more discrete areas, the sole source aquifer areas. Case in point, East Hampton supplies Montauk with a great amount of drinking water as seawater intrusion continues to be a real problem. We're going to further squeeze those finite drinking water supplies.
Adrian?
Okay, yeah. Sorry about that, Kevin. I wanted to agree 100% with what Kevin said. And I think one of the greatest challenges, and it's not really just the towns, but it is in part the towns, but we are overdeveloping this island. And we fail to recognize drinking water as the valuable but also fragile resource that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So the towns just keep developing and keep developing and keep developing, particularly in a place like Southfold, for instance, where they're running a water deficit. They're what's called groundwater mining, which means they take more water out of the ground each year than the rain is able to replace naturally. Well, I mean, if you take more money out of the bank than you're replacing, sooner or later, you have a problem. And the same is true for groundwater. So we have all of the challenges that both Kevin and I stated, But the solutions, you know, are what a lot of our elected officials are hesitant to address, which is A, overdevelopment, but B, also drinking water prevention, contamination prevention of that groundwater resource.
Do you mean going after specific companies or businesses?
No, I mean not locating specific companies or businesses right in the middle of our deep flow recharge zone.
Ah, I see
what
you're
saying. Those are the most sensitive zones.
Okay.
So it takes, you know, a lot of, I know, backbone by elected officials to say no to something. But that's what needs to be done. We have a finite resource, as Kevin said, maybe not in the middle of the Pine Barrens, but in any and many other areas throughout Long Island. And we treat it as if it is just an infinite, abundant, clean resource, and that is actually not true. There are places in Nassau County also where Kevin was talking about saltwater intrusion. They have saltwater intrusion too, not only in the North and South Fork, but in areas like the Port Washington Peninsula, Long Beach City, a very abundantly populated city on the South Shore. They actually have a lot of issues with saltwater intrusion into their aquifer system. So, you know, we keep developing and pretending that water is not a concern, but in fact, it really is.
Adrian, I hear everything that you're saying, but you and I have both been around long enough to know that, you know, money talks, right?
Well, unfortunately, money talks, but you know what else talks? The public. And mm-hmm. One of the things I think we can agree on is that, and it comes in poll after poll after poll, the public wants clean water, and they also want a good supply of water. I just had to go to California on the 1,4-dioxane toxic chemical issue, and there it's an issue because they want to do, and I wouldn't like use this terminology here, but they call it the toilet to tap program, where they're taking treated sewage effluent, it's really treated to a high standard, and they need to use it as a drinking water source because they have such a water shortage there. And so, you know, if we get to that point here, I think people are going to be concerned. So we have a chance now to prevent, you know, future concerns rather than to always being, you know, playing defense.
Hmm. Kevin, can I ask you why the quality seems to change so much from community to community? Why does that happen?
Well, it would be the influences in the watershed. And obviously when you have a point source with the perchlorinated compounds coming from several airports, for instance, you know, affecting down gradient water supplies. I think it really comes down to land use and the siting. As Adrian said, you know, higher density housing, overdevelopment, draining into a particular harbor or embayment, is going to have a greater influence than, you know, a more rural setting without, you know, extensive household development and all the chemicals that come with it.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, just one specific news story that happened the other day, and I'm sure you know about it, that the feds are going to give the Suffolk County Water Authority more than $4 million for the cleanup of groundwater that over at Francis Gabreski Airport in West Hampton Beach. Is this something that we're going to be hearing more about, more stories like this? And what's your reaction to that? Is $4 million enough?
I don't know if it's enough, and Adrian's certainly been at the forefront of some of the, you know, contaminant plumes further points further west, but I think this is the tip of the iceberg. You know, these emerging contaminants and the perfluorinated compounds, you know, we've already seen multiple locations where it's popped up and, you know, essentially rendered drinking water useless in these areas. And now the Water Authority has to lay lines and ultimately provide safe drinking water. This is going to be a more prevalent problem. And as I said, when you have the influences on the edges with saltwater intrusion, again, that's going to put a higher demand on you know, the protected sites. And to Adrian's point with the deep groundwater recharge areas, you know, we're probably not doing enough to ensure that they are protected. And again, that, you know, that water quality will be, you know, paramount to our well-being.
Adrian, is $4 million enough?
No, definitely not. You know, Kevin's exactly right, is that these people, I mean, first of all, who knows how long they've been drinking this contaminated water? That's what scares me. And it does. It keeps me up at night. Years. The answer is years. We don't know how many years, but it's years. And this is a very serious suite of chemicals, the PFASs. So 4 million is, you know, good news because it'll help defray the cost. The only good news about the PFAS and PFOS chemicals is that they can be treated with conventional carbon filtration treatments. Like, we know how to filter them out. We can filter them out. And the carbon actually can get it down to a very, very minuscule amount of 2 parts per trillion. So we can filter it. But, A, we need to first know what's there. And, B, I think the goal is to prevent contamination in the first place so people aren't drinking that water for years and decades before it's discovered. So 4 million, good start. Happy to have it. We'll take the Fed's money to, you know, filter out our drinking water. But we need to do better. We can't have people drinking water and coming down with cancer. That's not, you know, a good public health protection policy.
Kevin, do you know people who just only will drink bottled water or have their water delivered?
Yes. I drink strictly. well, not strictly. I do feel the tap safe. I don't have second thoughts about drinking out of the tap. You know, but clearly, you know, when you have these plumes that are showing up in neighborhoods, you know, in some cases by chance, you know, it's an alarming. And, you know, there's, I guess, a sense of security in drinking bottled water. And that's a, you know, whole nother issue with respect to water supplies. But, you know, it's unfortunate. We should turn on that tap and have assurances that, you know, it's safe drinking water. And that the, you know, the surrounding areas that are providing that water supply is in fact protected.
Adrian, what about you? Are you a bottled water fan?
No. You know, I also know people who, you know, do a lot of bottled water. But you know what? It's really become more of a fad than a necessity. And the other thing, people hate to hear this, but bottled water is not routinely tested. In fact, you know, my tap and Kevin's tap water is tested on a routine basis as mandated by New York State law, a minimum of 4 times per year. Many times it's more frequent than that. Bottled water, you could put anything, you could turn on the faucet in New Jersey, which actually some bottled water does come from New Jersey, and then they sell it as bottled water. It's not tested. It is not rigorously tested. You're better off with the tap water.
As someone who grew up in New York City, years ago, I got a kick when they started selling bottled tap water from New York City. I was like, are you kidding me? But I just didn't understand it.
New York City has what's called an unfiltered drinking water source. And New York City, I have to say, they had a lot of vision decades ago. They bought up all the land around their reservoirs to make sure that there was no industry, no overdevelopment. And yeah, they really do have a clean drinking water source now, and they're in a better water quality situation than Long Island is.
Adrian, this is a far-out question, but do you ever see the day when it might be that you would, pipes would have to come from the city to bring enough water out to the island?
Well, there has been some secret discussions about that. That might be something that's feasible in the very western sections of Nassau County, where they are running a groundwater mining or water deficit. So that's not exactly out of the question, and it's not a far-out question. Those pipes, though, would probably be unlikely that it would reach into areas such as western Suffolk, and certainly unlikely that it's not going to eastern Suffolk. So eastern Suffolk is going to have to depend on the Pine Barrens if there was ever a deficit. I mean, mm-hmm. I already have elected officials calling me, asking me what I think of desalinization plants. So, you know, we really need to manage our water as the valuable resource that it is. We should be saving it today for tomorrow.
Sometimes you ask a question and you just never know. And in terms of that desalination plants, more and more, the talk is going to be that, the talk is that we're going to see them off the coast of California in the very near future. They're expensive to run, but they say, look, if you need the water, you need the water.
Yeah, no, they're very energy intensive and very expensive, and actually, they can do a lot of environmental damage too. I know there are countries like Israel and islands that use them. I get it, but those places don't have any rain. You know, we have rain. so we could manage our water better so that we're not building expensive, destructive infrastructure to obtain our drinking water source.
I only have 1 minute left. Kevin, final thoughts, please.
I think what's happening at the county level is very positive. In the last 10 years, we've seen the coalesce of the community crying out for clean water, and we're seeing action on the part of government. So it's a great first step.
And Adrian, final thoughts, please.
Yeah, I'm very supportive of the county's new plan to change out the septic systems for new wastewater treatment systems. That's going to help not only with nitrogen, but apparently some of the other chemicals. There's a plan now in place that'll help us and at least make it better, and we'd like the public and our county legislators to support that plan.
So you think that we're on the right track here?
I think we're on a better track.
Adrian Esposito is the executive director of the Citizens Campaign for the Environment, and Kevin McAllister is the founder and the president of Defend H2O. Kevin, Adrian, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and I'm always appreciative of your time for both of you.
Thank you, Ron. Pleasure being on.
Take care.
Thank you.
Be well, Kevin. Be well, Adrian. We'll speak to you soon. If you would like to comment on today's program, drop us an email. We're at tfs@wshu.org. You can even find us on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook. We're at Full Story WSHU. And please remember that if you didn't, or if you would like to listen to the full program once again, all the shows are available as podcasts. You can download the full story on Google Play or an Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or Spotify. That is going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone is our engineer with an assist from Julie Ferdino. Carrie Frank is a digital editor. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.